It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. History was made this summer in Rio with the first ever refugee team competing for Olympic gold. Those athletes will no doubt be regarded as trailblazers, in Olympic history at least. But let's turn back the Olympic clock 80 years to learn about some other trailblazers.
Hitler was riding high when the Olympics were held in Berlin. And he made the games a background for his own propaganda. This was the kind of show that Hitler loved, for he was dreaming of world conquest.
Adolf Hitler opened the 1936 Games with a brief statement. He said, quote, "I declare the Berlin Games, celebrating the 11th Olympian of modern times, open," end quote.
Ich verkünde die Spiele von Berlin zur Feier der 11. Olympiade neuer Zeitrechnung als eröffnet.
As the crowd cheered, 18 African-American athletes, including two from Georgia, prepared to take center stage. They competed in front of Hitler and the rest of the world. A new documentary at this weekend's Bronze Lens Film Festival in Atlanta tells their story. It's called Olympic Pride, American Prejudice. And joining me now is Atlanta filmmaker Deborah Riley Draper. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Fantastic.
And also with us is former Atlanta Mayor Bill Campbell, who knows a little about Olympic preparation. He served in office during the 1996 Summer Games in Atlanta. It's a pleasure to have you here.
And thank you for having me.
He's a fabulous cast member of our film as well.
How did you become involved? You just asked if he would share his remembrances?
Well, you know what it was is former Mayor Bill Campbell has an amazing body of knowledge about sports history, but particularly that intersection between sports, culture, and race, and the fight for equality. So that's kind of his subject matter expertise in this film. So it was a natural.
And that's what you wanted to get at in this film, was the intersection of sports, culture, and race.
Absolutely.
Which you do telling these stories of Olympians who most people have never heard of before. Why was it just Jesse Owens, Bill? Was it just his outstanding performance in those Olympic Games that meant that he kind of overshadowed the other African-American athletes?
Well, I think because he won so many gold medals and his performance was so outstanding, but also the compelling story of Jesse Owens, not just during the Olympic Games, but after the Games when they had degraded him by having him race against horses and just the prejudice that he experienced when he came back to the United States. It was and continues to be one of the most difficult stories, I think, in all of sports. And Deborah has told it so well, along with the stories of the other Olympians.
So two of these athletes were from Georgia.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about these two Georgians.
Ralph Metcalf was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and of course he was a part of the 1932 Olympics. His family moved to Chicago in the Great Migration. So he won medals in 1932. He won medals again in 1936. But what's interesting about him is he goes on to become a congressman, and he co-writes the resolution for Black History Month and is the co-founder of the Congressional Black Caucus. So he has set this path that we all have benefited from since the day he was born here in Atlanta.
And he got to compete in the 1932 ones, but we have this commentary from your documentary. You talked with Olympic athlete John Brooks's daughter, Daria, and she talks about how difficult it was for her dad to get into the Olympics.
You know, my dad wasn't allowed to compete in 32, even though he qualified, because there was a white athlete that the team had decided they wanted to push. And he told him, "You cheated me, but you won't get the chance to cheat me again."
And he did, of course, compete in 1936. So, Bill, what made the change in those 4 years? It's not like we made some big racial breakthrough in the United States. Why was there such a difficulty in getting onto the 32 team and then they were able to get on in 36?
Well, Avery Brundage, who unfortunately besmirched the entire Olympic ideal, also removed two Jewish members from the 1936 Games going to Germany. I think ultimately for African Americans, what sports represents is a definable beginning and an end, and you're measured by what you're able to do in that interim. And they simply were not able to keep African-American athletes out in 36 because their performances, they had gone to more colleges, they were being accepted across the country, and the numbers that they were putting up in terms of their times in these events was so outstanding, they simply could not be kept away from the games in 36.
And we actually have another clip from the documentary. You mentioned Ralph Metcalf of Atlanta. He would later become, as you said, an Illinois congressman. In this interview that you included years later, he's talking about the fact that he was so upset about the decisions that were made to appease the Germans.
I resented the fact that they left two Jewish boys off of the team, Frank Stoller and Marty Glickman, in order to satisfy the Nazi people over there. It was our team. We were not supposed to have Germany dictate to us, nor their philosophy, nor their politics to us, because we selected our own team and we should have fielded our best athletes.
And yet there was fear of the safety of some of these athletes going to Germany, ruled by Adolf Hitler at that point. Was there a hesitation upon the part of some of the athletes, or what kind of preparations did the Olympic Games do to keep them safe?
Well, you have to remember, leading up to, in the run-up to the 1936 Olympics, there was a huge boycott in this country. The country was divided. There was a part of the country that didn't want the American team there at all. And there was a part of the country that did want to support the German games. And these African-American athletes realized that this was an opportunity to be on the world stage. So regardless of what potential threat or what potential harm they may encounter, they wanted to go. They wanted to represent not just their country, but they wanted to represent their race and themselves and their communities, because they looked at it as a chance to prove that they have earned and deserved their right to be considered first-class citizens and not second-class citizens.
And Bill, this is kind of the triumph and the tragedy of this particular story, because they were high hopes, it sounds like, from some of these athletes that winning medals at the Olympics would change America's attitude, at least towards African-American athletes. Would you say that's fair?
It was fair, and you must understand that in 1936, this was the first time, except for Jack Johnson, the black boxer, that there had ever been a national presentation of African-American athletes or any African-Americans of significance whatsoever. So there was a real hope that 36 was an opportunity. FDR had been elected as the president. The country was rebounding from the Great Depression. There was a real optimism in the African-American community that this would signal an opportunity for the country to advance and actually live up to its ideals. But sadly, as Deborah's wonderful documentary points out, that was not the case.
Before we get to the sad part of it, let me play a little bit of the triumph. This is from a 1996 oral history interview, and the clips that you got are incredible in this documentary. But this was done for the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Again, we hear the voice of gold medalist John Woodruff. He's talking about winning the men's 800-meter race in the 1936 Olympics.
There was very definitely a special feeling in winning the gold medal and being a black man. We destroyed his master race theory whenever we start winning those gold medals. So I was very proud of that achievement, and I was very happy for myself as an individual, for my race, and for my country.
Okay, so Deborah, the effect on African Americans especially seemed to have been quite strong. And I want to play one more clip before we get to you. And this is Andrew Young, UN, former UN ambassador and former Atlanta mayor.
And a great swimmer, by the way, at Howard University.
And he ran track, too.
Oh, did he? I didn't even know that one. Anyhow, he actually remembers watching the 1936 games with his dad.
My daddy took me to see the movie-tone news version of the 1936 Olympics. And I can remember going to a segregated movie, which we didn't do often, but he thought that was important. So we climbed up in the balcony and we saw the 100 meters.
He's talking about when he, in your film, he talks about going into there and his dad even going into a segregated movie theater, which they didn't usually do, just because he wanted to see them succeed. So the impact on African Americans seems to have been huge.
It was huge. Wolfie Frazier says that he's Louise Stokes' son. He said whether or not the broader community understood, these were heroes in the neighborhood, and those heroes made more heroes to keep it actually going. And the fact that if they weren't there, we wouldn't have the integration in sports we now know. It could have taken 20 or 30 more years if 18 African American Olympians had not been on the world stage in 1936.
You can join this conversation by tweeting us at OSD Talk or go to Facebook. My guests are filmmaker Deborah Riley Draper and former Atlanta Mayor Bill Campbell, talking about the new documentary, Olympic Pride, American Prejudice. It tells the story of 18 African-American athletes who competed in the 1936 Summer Olympics in Berlin, including two from Georgia. So, Bill, they return home, and when they first get home from the Olympics, they are treated like heroes by the wider public, are they not?
Momentarily.
How long
it was one day.
Really? The moment lasted 24 hours?
I think all of us understand that 1936 was a particularly difficult time for America in terms of race relations, and these athletes who had just really demolished the entire racist theory of Nazi Germany, unfortunately, came back and expected that they would be welcomed and treated in the way that you would imagine for sports heroes, but it did not happen that way. They were lauded in their own community, but as soon as they got into the broader community, it was right back to the same segregationist practices that they had endured even before they left.
And this is a time when, especially here in the South, for the athletes returning to Georgia, Jim Crow still was the law of the land.
Well, let me just say this, Celeste. You know, we, for so long, we have talked about Jim Crow in the South, but the entire country was racist. And let's not talk about just the South and Jim Crow. They had a different brand of racism in the South, but it was all over the entire country. Jesse Owens was, and Metcalf
Rob Metcalf
was,
returned to Chicago.
Yes.
Jesse returned to Chicago. Dave returned to Ohio. Archie returned to California. So there was an institutionalized racism that was pervasive from coast to coast. We kind of branded as Jim Crow, and we oftentimes pigeonhole it into being a certain thing, but there was second-class citizenship afforded to African-Americans in the country.
And by the way, Celeste, the reason that you were asking initially, the reason these 18 athletes got into the games in 36 was because they were allowed entry into universities that were principally in the North and in the West, and that's how they were able to compete. There were no Southern universities that were allowing these athletes to compete on the track and field teams. And in fact, that didn't happen until, as you know, way far into the 60s. So that just was not the way their avenue to get into the Olympic Games.
And when John Woodruff came back from the Olympics, he was at Pitt. When he returned, he was still on the team at Pitt because he was just a freshman. He actually came down to Georgia, and he came down to Annapolis. And when he tried to compete at Annapolis, the team was not allowed to compete because John Woodruff was on the team.
So,
as a gold medal winner.
One of the things that you lay the case for in your documentary is that these 18 athletes helped to lay the groundwork for what would eventually become the civil rights movement. Why do you say that?
Well, I think it's like former Mayor Bill Campbell said, when you have 18 African-Americans who are able to defy what is, you know, defined as Jim Crow and defy Aryan supremacy and stand on the world stage and represent the United States, even when they cannot vote, their mere presence sent a message. And while they may not be credited for standing strong and holding their head up among all of this atrocity, they did it. And because they did it, 10 years later, Mack Robinson, who was on the 1936 Olympic team, his brother is able to integrate baseball. Now, of course, Mack Robinson was born right here in Georgia.
Yes, and as was Jackie.
As was Jackie. But Mack Robinson had to instill a certain level of courage and have that conversation with his brother. And it may have gone something like this. Hey, Mack, I'm going to integrate baseball. I think it's going to be kind of tough. Well, really, I faced Hitler. I think you can handle it. You know, so, but seriously, these guys afforded us the opportunity to think bigger, to think on a global stage.
Bill, you were the mayor of a city where the civil rights movement really got a lot of its start. Do you buy this argument that these 18 athletes helped set the groundwork for that?
Not only did they set the groundwork for it, but I think there's a straight line from these athletes to John Carlos and Tommy Smith in the 68 games. In fact, for me, that moment in Mexico City when those two fabulous athletes raised their fists is still the most iconic moment in sports for most African Americans of my vintage. And the fact they also live here and I had the honor of meeting them was one of the great moments for sports for me. And I think when you look at the fact that there was so little that African Americans had to cheer for or anyone to recognize their achievements. That is what really allowed so many African Americans the moment of pride and dignity. And it began this whole effort to start the civil rights movement and stand up for what they believe. And by the way, as Deborah was pointing out, and I think she points out in the documentary, there was considerable consternation even amongst the African American community in 36 as to whether or not these athletes ought to go and in essence be utilized by Avery Brundage and the Olympic Committee as the superior athletes, and yet they were not going to be treated well when they were here. And so the African American community in 1936 was split as to whether or not they should even allow themselves to be utilized in that fashion.
So we only have about a minute left, Deborah, but that particular part of the documentary reminded me of the debate that went among African Americans when Barack Obama was running for president. Why is this story still relevant?
Well, the story is still relevant because if we take a look at what happened to Louise Stokes and Tidy Pickett in 1936, and we fast forward 80 years, the conversation and the rhetoric around Gabby Douglas,
the gymnast.
Absolutely. So she's experiencing the same language and the same violent comments that Tidy and Louise experienced in America when they were the first two Black women to ever represent this country as Olympic heroes. And you would think in 80 years, the conversation would change and it would be reframed. It's not depressing. It's something to point out so that we can understand that we actually need to deal with our implicit bias. And that's what we want people to take away from this film, that we have to understand what we're bringing to the table when we have these conversations. And the more we learn and understand our history, we would know that we don't need to put Gabby through those paces because we've already put Louise and Tidy through those paces 80 years earlier.
That is filmmaker Deborah Riley Draper. And we also spoke with former Atlanta Mayor Bill Campbell. You can catch Deborah's documentary, which features Bill Campbell, Olympic Pride, American Prejudice. It'll screen this Sunday at 2 o'clock at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights in Atlanta. It's part of the Bronze Lens Film Festival. Deborah and Bill, thank you both so much.
Thank you.